Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Domain. My name is Alex Matsuo, and I am your hostess for this evening. So, this show is brought to you by LiveParanormal.com and History.fm, and we are here with quite a great show for you tonight. Now, I'm going to go on a premature commercial break right now so I can get our lovely guest on the line. So, we will be back in just a moment, and we'll be ready to get going.
Live Paranormal Radio is the place to be, so join us at liveparanormal.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is Live Paranormal Radio, brought to you by LiveParanormal.com, the number one interactive online community for everything paranormal, horror, and sci-fi. LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit LiveParanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.
And we are back, everybody, so we're just waiting for our guest to dial in. Tonight's guest is John C. Fowler. Sorry, everybody, I'm still dealing with some allergies. He is the founder and creator of Paranormal Enlightenment Magazine, and he also founded the Paranormal Dictionary, and he is quite the innovative person when it comes to recent paranormal development, so I'm really excited to have him here on the show tonight, and if this is your first time tuning in, you're in for quite a treat. There are a couple ways to get a hold of us. You can either call us at 619-639-4606, or what you can do is you can email us at wickeddomainradio@gmail.com, as well as joining us in the live paranormal chat room, which is actually the preferred way to connect with us, whether you are listening for the first time or this is your 10th, 20th time tuning in. I want to say welcome, and you should know how awesome the live paranormal chat room really is. So it's free to create an account, and you can go over to the chat room where we have lots of listeners there talking with each other, and it'll be for sure a good time. We will also field questions and comments from the chat room as well. Alrighty, and you can also email us at wickeddomainradio@gmail.com. I think I already said that. Or you can tweet us at Wicked Domain on Twitter, Wicked Domain, so you got the two D's in the middle, and it'll all be easy peasy, lemon squeezy. So I'm going to step away from the mic for just a moment to help out our guest, and we will go ahead and get rolling with the show.
This is live. LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit LiveParanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars. Want to advertise with Live Paranormal Radio? Please contact us at LiveParanormal.com.
Alrighty, everybody, and we are back, and we have our awesome guest, John Fowler, on the show. So I hope he is ready to go because I'm about to put him on the line. So, John, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Wicked Domain.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. A little bit of technical difficulties today, but, you know, usual.
usual flow of things. So, John, go ahead and introduce yourself for us for those of our listeners who may not know who you are.
Well, my name is John Fowler. I am the founder of Midnight Watchmen and ParanormalDictionary.com, as well as Paranormal Journeys Expo and ParanormalEnlightenment.com and magazine.
Nice.
That's definitely a mouthful at times, yes.
So you've been quite busy these last few months then, for sure.
Yeah, I always seem to add something to my list every year, so I don't know why. I guess I'm just dedicated.
Dedicated, passionate. I don't know. Those are good words for that. So what made you want to start Paranormal Enlightenment? Wow, I can talk tonight.
Well, on the Midnight Watchman site for a while, we had a section called Cannon Shots, which was less about what we investigated, more about ideas and thoughts, kind of like what the magazine is now. And I had guest writers come in occasionally at the beginning stages before people got busy. And I realized, you know, I kind of want to separate the two things as the grouping itself and then the magazine, what became the magazine, as more of a paranormal project. And fast forward, I just decided, you know, let's try this. And I got a bunch of people on board that are really good writers, like yourself, and we keep moving forward here. First magazine should be out at the end of the month. I'm actually just talking to Chuck now about the layout, so hopefully real soon here.
Nice. Now, not that I'm biased or anything. So looking at the lineup that you've had on your site as of late, there's been a lot of really good material out there. Now, what's your goal with this magazine? I mean, are you targeting the beginner investigator? Are you targeting, like, you know, the veteran who's been in the field for a long time?
I would think we're targeting everybody. My whole thing has always been to try to get people to engage and think about what they're reading, not just blindly follow. And this magazine, from what I'm seeing so far with everybody being hands-off, letting people just write and, you know, show me what they're thinking about, I think it's working. I mean, we have a lot of good information about for people who are starting out. We also have some little tidbits of information here that, you know, we've all learned through the years at different points that, you know, people can just go to one place now and just look at it and see it and go, wow, that's good to know.
Cool. Nice. So what have been some of your favorite articles that have come through the magazine so far?
Actually, my favorite ones, to be honest, are ones that haven't been actually released yet, that they're actually for the magazine. That's kind of the best, as I call it, that's sitting right now. And
nice.
It's hard to come sometimes pick a favorite, to be honest, because there's a lot of good stuff that's been coming through.
Cool. So, I mean, because it looks like you guys are constantly publishing stuff. I mean, you have quite a lineup, too, when it comes to writers, not myself included, not to toot my own horn. But, I mean, you got Anna Hill, who is honestly, she's fantastic, and I love her writings, mm-hmm. and I love all the work that she does. You also have Chad up there on the lineup. I mean, you've really got a good group of people surrounding you when it comes to producing material.
Yes, a lot of years of experience. are sitting on our staff, and even some newer people who really aren't that experienced in the paranormal, but have a desire for it. And I think that's a good mixture. You have that wide-eyed rookie, if you will, viewpoint, as well as the veteran. And I think that's great, because no matter how long you're in the paranormal community, you have different people you're going to run into like that. So there's some people that still act like rookies that have been doing it for 30 years, and you have people that have been doing it for 2 years that are more like veterans. So I like the mix we have, and I think it translates well for when people are looking at, you know, different paranormal stories and ideas.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good mix, too, because, you know, sometimes if there's a publication that has a lot of people who've been in the field for X amount of years, some of the newer people may feel a little intimidated. Mm-hmm. So that's really good that you got some newer investigators and new researchers involved in this as well. I mean, it gives you a nice little mix there.
Definitely. And I think the mixture is what makes it so special. And we're still adding people as we talk that are going to probably be working on reviews for paranormal equipment, shows, and some other things that are just be something a little bit different too on the site. And even some original stories that are not true life, but just entertainment, besides podcasts and some other stuff we're working on behind the scenes here.
Sweet. Now, how did your journey start in the paranormal? I mean, we're so happy to have you today and now. How did this all begin? I mean, did you have an experience when you were a child, or was it just a fascination that you've had growing up over the years that just evolved into this epic size project that you've got going now?
I had some experiences growing up, and then also growing up, you know, in the 80s, I was lucky enough, I guess you can say, to see things like Ghostbusters and Unsolved Mysteries and some old episodes of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, Arthur C. Clarke's, you know, different shows that were like A&E at the time. So I got exposed to a lot of different things that, compared to today, were more just fact-based shows that were just asking questions and talking about things. And it just got my interest piqued, and it just never really changed.
Nice. When you said Unsolved Mysteries, immediately Robert Stack came to mind, and that mm-hmm. epic voice of his. Wow. Some nostalgia right there.
Yeah.
Nice. So what made you decide to start becoming an investigator and someone who wanted to be proactive in this field?
I kind of always wanted to be an investigator and do something with it, even growing up and hitting my teenage years. I just never found anybody, like people that would join with me to help move forward on that for the longest time. Just people weren't ready, you know, too young. And none of us really knew what we were going. And back then, too, the internet wasn't really as full of places and things to look this up as it is today. So it just sat. And then I always kept reading books and, you know, stories and all that, and looking into things when we can. Of course, you know, going with friends, hanging out at places sometimes back in the day, like we all pretty much did, you know, that were supposed to be haunted. And finally, I believe it was 2005 or 6, one of my friends went to Gettysburg with his wife, and they got a weird picture. And of course they showed it to me because, you know, I have an interest in that type of stuff. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to make of it. Tony, basically my friend, and I debated it, his wife debated it, and I said to him, I wonder how hard it would be to go out there and investigate it, because we had talked about it a little bit more, me, him, and a couple other people. And I made a phone call to the orphanage out in Gettysburg.
Oh, the orphanage.
And found out that basically that was booked at the time, but we could investigate the Jenny Wade House if we wanted. And so we set it up, and, you know, since then I've been rolling. I mean, the original members have since moved on to other projects in life and whatnot, but I've just been continue going with some new people and a new team over the years and just keep plowing forward.
Cool. It's funny that you mentioned Gettysburg and the orphanage and whatnot. I know you and I have briefly talked about my experiences mm-hmm. there, and Gettysburg is probably one of the most active locations I've ever been to. And in your opinion, why do you think that Gettysburg is so haunted?
Well, I think there's two things in Gettysburg that happens. I think you have the the perception of the haunting that people play up for the tourist trade, and then you have the legitimate stuff that happens out there, and they kind of get intertwined in a unique way just because the town is such a tourist town. But I do believe the energy generally that's there from the battles and then the people that visit and then the town itself attributes to a lot of the activity that people see, whether it's perceived or reality.
That's a good point. I have to say, I think the tourism in Gettysburg, I mean, granted, the tourism in Gettysburg is great because it brings money into the economy of the town. But yeah, it seems that it's, I don't want to see, well, yeah, it has commercialized it in my, this is my personal opinion. No offense to any of the people that are listening that may be running some of these ghost tours and everything, because we definitely appreciate you. But it seems like, it feels like it's a partial dog and pony show too, in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot's changed since I was first there in 07. And we go every year. My team goes every year. I go every year, sometimes twice a year because I just love the area. But I noticed the true history tours have dwindled to almost not being existent. And then last year, I saw somebody started an actual history tour driving around the town, which was the first time I've actually seen a history tour, nothing paranormal in it at all, in a long time besides the actual, you know, national federal part of the park. So I think it's starting to come around where there's, you know, like any market, you know, it's oversaturated with the ghost stuff, and finally it's coming back to that mix again slowly.
Well, and that's great too, because the history is so important, especially for the battlefield, because one, you don't really know what you're looking at unless you have some sort of knowledge about the battle. And I mean, I'll be honest, as someone who's been studying the Battle of Gettysburg for a number of years, it's one thing to read about it in the books and to look at maps, but once you're there, I mean, as someone who's not a local, it can be hard to get your bearings in and really, I mean, know what you're looking at, because otherwise it's a field of grass.
Yeah, and it's, even with their little maps and stuff that are there that will, like, tell you, you know, like, the bat, like, Lee was coming this way, or, you know, who, you know, it's just, it's hard to wrap your head around it, even with a 3D map looking at it at times. It is hard, but it is such, like, once you start to understand the battle, like, if you, like you said, you studied it, so you understand it, you really do get a feel for really how insane and crazy that was there at that time.
Yeah, and it's hard to wrap your head around it, too, because, I mean, so many people died or were lost or wounded, and the aftermath, and I think this is some, a part of the history of Gettysburg that gets overlooked, because it's always battle, but the aftermath of it and how the town basically had to clean itself up afterwards was incredible.
Yeah, the stories that I hear that were passed down, and about, you know, the medical facilities that, you know, for treating soldiers, the mass graves, and it is just almost unfathomable, a thought process. But it's true, you know. But when you walk around the cemetery, especially in Gettysburg for the National Cemetery, and you see the numbers laid out, you know, for unknown soldiers, and you realize how much, you know, each number is a person, you start to really get a feel that this is just amazing. It's not something you, how did nobody know who these people are, you know? And that's also one of the reasons we have, like, dog tags now, is because of stuff like that. It's all, a lot more of that history has affected us today than people realize.
Oh yeah, and we live in such an age today where, gosh, everyone knows each other. We all know who, you know, person X, Y, and Z are, and it's such a difference from back then. And the Civil War really jarred our perception of, I mean, of even death, because I don't know if any listeners here are familiar with John Sable, but he's very, very passionate and very knowledgeable about the quote-unquote the good death, which, you know, back in the 1800s, you know, before the Civil War took place, when you died at home, surrounded by family, and then you were buried in the family plot in the back. And the Civil War completely changed that. You had people who, like you mentioned, with grave markers with just a number, you know, these unknown soldiers, and basically these people who didn't get a chance to go home to be laid to rest. And in my opinion, I feel like that's a big contributor to a lot of the paranormal experiences and hauntings that have that occur still to this day. I guess you could call it the unfinished business or unresolved business aspect of it, but you know, it definitely broke tradition on how death was perceived. And you know, now we have military cemeteries thanks to the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. The Civil War history, honestly, is more in depth than most people realize. Because even when you're taught in school, whatever you're taught in school about it, it doesn't touch on certain things. Like you said about Lee's family home becoming the national cemetery for soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know, most people, you might know about it, but it's not something that, at least I know for me, was not taught in school.
Nope.
It's something I found out later. So it's...
Yeah. I totally agree with that, too. There's a lot of things that I think we still haven't figured out when it comes to Civil War history and whatnot. And granted, we're unearthing a lot of new stuff still. So, mm-hmm. Cool. So to switch gears a little bit to the paranormal community and whatnot, what... Given that, you know, you're doing the magazine and everything, what is your opinion on ParaUnity?
Well, ParaUnity is one of those topics that it depends on your definition of it. And unfortunately, so many people have a different definition and what it means to them. It's really not as cut and dry as it should be. ParaUnity, I mean, should just be working together, but some people take it a little bit different than that, and it can be blind following as well.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, ParaUnity isn't just working together and sharing, you know, knowledge, ideas, and all that. It's great. But unfortunately, it doesn't always work out that way. Because of, you know, at times people have their issues in the community because it's people. You know, not everybody likes each other. It happens. It's life. So you have people that are closed off to talking to other groups because they had a bad experience or they're afraid of a bad experience. They have others that just think they're right and don't want to learn anything new. So it's you have all kinds in the community, and it's just it's hard to ParaUnity is a great idea, but it's a definition I think that's kind of been too broadened and then narrowed at the same time, if that makes any sense. It's a little weird.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, it's something that I think people have different definitions of. I mean, some people see it as you have to agree with me and agree with everything that I say, or you're against me, or you don't believe in ParaUnity. And then there's others who feel that it's more of a respect issue and or a respect concern, and driving towards, I guess, a consensus of ethics and basically not only how we treat our clients or these haunted locations, but also how we treat each other.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm on the fence about ParaUnity. I used to be completely against it, and I went through a phase where I was completely for it, and now I don't know how I feel about it. So it's a tough one.
It is. That's what I said. It really depends what your definition is. And from there, as long as it's out there what your definition is, I think people understand where you're coming from more. But I'll say this about paranormity. Yes, paranormity. Wow.
I think you just coined a new term there.
I may have. ParaUnity. Even on Paranormal Dictionary, I have never actually put it up there because I'm not sure the way to write it up. And I mean, it's such something that somebody should be so simple, but it's not. So to me, that speaks volumes too. And the fact that I can't even figure out a simple terminology for it, you know, and if it is up there, it's probably not one that I'm happy with, you know? So.
Cool. Now let's segue to Paranormal Dictionary. Now, what is Paranormal Dictionary? I know the definition itself may seem self-explanatory, but let's hear about it. Let's talk about it.
Well, basically, it's the idea was to have one place for all the information on the paranormal that's possible, as in definitions, groups, people, places, and if possible, I tried to get for like the places. Dates that groups investigated it, so it could help in theory bring some teams together, double check data. For example, if I was at Jenny Wade like I was in 2007, if I knew the group that was in before me and after me, it'd be interesting to see if they got anything or if they didn't. And then what we did get, did it match? Or maybe they figured out something that we didn't figure out for a noise or a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest thing with this site, which is right now in what I call a 2.0 phase, where I'm in process of moving it over to a new server, is the current version is a true wiki site, which means anybody at the time could sign up and edit. And that's not really good for the paranormal community and for people, just because, well, you have the trolls and stuff out there that will cause problems with that. So the newer version, once I get it up, which hopefully will be the next month or so, when people sign up, they can only edit their own pages.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else can edit their page. So basically it gives you a place to edit and put yourself out there in the community, as well as helping with the other things by letting us know things. And with the reference tags that we have on there, it'll help validate what people are saying. So you can't just go on and say, you know, you investigated, you know, XYZ this week and have no proof of it. Because the references are very important in everything we do,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Well, yeah, especially, Paranormal Dictionary, that's I'm looking at the site right now, and, I mean, it's clean. It's I love the layout of it. And, yeah, I mean, you're basically giving people a space to do some work and make their work known, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because basically I realized a long time ago Wikipedia isn't going to help us make a directory for ourselves easily. It just won't work. We're not, quote-unquote, notable enough, most of us, to go on to Wikipedia, just by their standards. And, I mean, I used to take offense to that, but I realized, in the grand scheme of things, you know, for me, I'm just a, you know, small beans. I mean, I'm not famous for, like, anything, really, like, in the grand, you know what I mean, the grand scheme of things. Can't even talk today. Grand scheme of things.
Oh, it must be contagious.
In the world. Yeah. And, I mean, it's just the way it is. You know,
Gotcha. And I understand, too, that you have, and you mentioned when you said that you're busy in the paranormal community, you also have an event coming up soon, too, a Paranormal Expo.
Yes, Paranormal Journeys Expo this year will be at Graham Park in Horsham, PA. This will be our third year running it, second year at Graham, September 19th. Basically, my expos differ from a lot of the conventions and stuff around the country that I'm aware of in the fact that the people that are there are what I call frontline people. They're people you'd actually would call and talk to about a case. Like if you called up a group, these are the ones you'd be talking to. It's not like you know, if you're talking to Zach Baggins, you're probably not going to get Zach Baggins to come out and investigate your house, for example. You're not going to talk to him directly, you know what I mean, at a convention and set something up. While our, you know, the Paranormal Journeys, you know, the people you meet are the people coming out. There's no in-between there. We also don't have a cover charge to come in. It's free to come in, so it's very family-friendly. The only costs are for, obviously, anything you buy or the investigation ticket or the lectures. And the lectures are only $5 per lecture. So it's very cheap. The proceeds go towards a property and or a charity every year. Pretty
cool.
Simple.
Nice. Who are some of the speakers that you have lined up?
Well, we actually are going to do a roundtable Q&A. We did this last year. So far, the speakers are myself, Dave Giuliano, Kenny Biddle. We will be adding some more
Kenny
to that. Yep, good old Kenny. We'll be adding more to that Q&A session as we get closer. Kenny's also doing a lecture on analyzing paranormal photography. His lectures are always very good and down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the few people I've met that do photography in the paranormal that have been able to explain to me in layman's terms what some of the stuff meant. Because I know a lot of people are just so familiar with their cameras and their terms that they forget. You know, somebody like me that doesn't know a thing about photography doesn't understand what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So his are very down-to-earth but informative. We also have Tom Conwell, which will be doing UFO sightings in Pennsylvania. another part that I'm trying to do in the community of the paranormal is get more UFO encrypted and ghost groups, quote unquote, working together, because I don't see that too often in a large scale. They're kind of all in their own little corners of the para world.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Dave Giuliano will be speaking as well about ghost hunting groups, scientific versus hobbyist versus assistance / resolution, which I think that'll be interesting myself to see what his thought processes are on that. Because there is a divide there, I think, a little bit in the community on, you know, the spiritualist, the hobbyist, the science end, the, you know. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have one more at least here. That's Shannon Jones will be doing the history of paranormal investigation in the Victorian era, which I think is just interesting because that time frame is just a unique history here.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Sounds like you got quite a lineup, and yeah, for real. I mean, and it's free. I mean, besides, you know, the couple dollars for the lectures. I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that if you have an event that's family-friendly, it's better overall just because, you know, some of these other conventions, I mean, to be honest, you're paying so much to get in, there isn't much money left for the vendors and stuff to come out for someone to buy something. And it's
right.
A shame because, you know, these vendors do – I mean, I'm always upfront with everybody. These vendors pay to have a spot, and then you pay – and you're charging people to come in on top of it. It's like the only people winning is, I hate to say it, the people booking the event or the ones that are being paid to come out. And I be honest, I don't pay anybody to come out to our event for speakers. All these people volunteer their time.
Hmm. That's great too. I mean, cause there's a lot of, para celebrities out there who, will charge a lot of money, and not that that's a terrible thing. I mean, we all got to put food on the table and whatnot, but I know sometimes it's good to donate your skills once in a while to at least help contribute to a worthy cause. And that sounds like you guys are doing something really good there, especially, you know, with the charity benefit and whatnot.
Yeah. Every year we, you know, worked on something. Our first expo helped a soup kitchen in Lansdale near me here. And then the last year we were at Graham, which all the proceeds went to Graham. And then the same thing this year, we're going to help Graham out. And, you know, it's good. I mean, I think that's what the paranormal community is always usually talking about, helping people. So why would our events not do the same? I mean, that's just the way I look at it.
Good. Now, just out of curiosity, how much does it cost to put on one of these, one of these conventions?
Well, that can vary. I mean, it really depends on sometimes who you know too. And what I mean by that is, if you have a bigger convention like some of the ones that have gone on the last few years and you're running out a, you know, casino's grand hall, you know, that can run some couple thousand dollars, I would think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're booking a tent like we're doing at Graham, I mean, if you have a good relationship with them and have worked with them like we have, I mean, honestly, we're not paying for the tent. We're just helping them.
Wow.
So it's their event, but we're running it. And it's one of those things, I think, is just, you know, one of the reasons we can keep costs down because we don't really have to make up costs. And the
mm-hmm.
stuff we do have to buy, we cover from the vendor spaces. So,
wow. Okay.
You know, we're definitely a different animal when it comes to paranormal conventions compared to most.
Sweet. Well, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a fantastic event, and who knows? I might drive up and check it out, especially
well,
for low cost.
Well, you're more than welcome to, obviously. I mean, every year I think we've had people meet some people that, like, in the community that haven't met each other officially yet, and it's always a good time. The groups always get along, and everybody's friendly and happy, and it's just, I think, a nice environment because everybody's got the same mindset for the most part that goes to these. So,
cool. Sweet. So my next question for you is, what is the one thing that you wish you could bestow upon the paranormal community, like some sort of knowledge or advice or tidbits?
Well, there's a lot of things I could probably say there, but I think for the most part, it's just never stop learning, because there's always something new to learn or relearn or realize in the field. There's just so many things out there that change, whether it's technology or ideas. You got to keep learning and keep that open mind to move forward.
Nice. Cool. So my next question for you comes from a listener, and they want to know what your thoughts are on EMF detectors and Frank's box.
Well, EMF detectors do their job for EMF. Whether there's actual ghost spirit activity connected to that, I don't know. I have never seen anything myself that correlates the two together. So EMF seems to be everything a detector has, everybody has, but I'm not sure if we really need it on an investigation. As for Frank's box and Shack Hacks and all of them, I'm on the fence about that, to be honest. I've had some interesting audio, to say the least, come through them. I was cursed at a location over that, which obviously shouldn't come through AM/FM waves. And when I say cursed, I mean like 5 minutes straight, not just, you know, one thing you go, oh, that sounded like that.
Ooh.
But then most of the time, I would have to think that what we're hearing is just the AM/FM snippets that are just mad, you know, randomly getting lucky, I guess you could say, kind of sounding like what we think we're asking. So I'm on the fence about them, and I do continue to try them and test it out, but I don't really hold that as high evidence.
Okay. I definitely agree with that. So now, is there a piece of equipment, tech, I guess you could call it, for my listeners? Is there a piece of tech or equipment that you're favorable to, or that you'll grab when you go on a ghost hunt or investigation?
Well, if it's at night, it's my flashlight for sure, above everything else. honestly, I would think the thing I have on me the most is my flashlight and an audio recorder. That's typically all I carry, I would say, 99% of the time anymore.
Okay. Nice. Now, are we talking like using the flashlight to go on and off, or just to make sure that you don't fall into a ditch?
It's mostly not to fall into a ditch. I don't believe in the flashlight trick, as they call it, at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if a spirit's going to use a flashlight for me and turn it on and off, they're using the switch. I'm not going to unscrew a back or anything like that, where, you know, thermal dynamics can come into play. It's going to have to physically turn that flashlight on, and I've never had that happen yet.
You know, the day that happens, if it ever happens, I mean, I hope for the day it comes up, because I feel the same way about the flashlight trick. There's so many variables that can influence the battery, or, you know, I don't know. I just don't think it's I might tick off a few listeners right now, but I just don't think it's substantial. It's not substantial enough to submit it as evidence. That's my opinion, though. I guess I should. I should probably play that disclaimer that these do not reflect the views of Live Paranormal. But anyway, so we have another question from the chat room, and it's from, I'm not going to read this username because I'll sound like a dork. They want to know, you know who you are, listener, what are your thoughts about the paranormal as it seems to be shifting to a widespread use of demonology and or darker subjects? And what is your experience with these areas?
I'm not sure what they mean by darker subjects, but the term demon, demonology, demonologist, any of those variations, I think get thrown around a lot more now than they need to be. I've never really encountered anything that I would call a demon. I've dealt with what I think are some darker spirits as a negative, just like there's people that are negative. I would think just from my belief system that there'd be more spirit souls floating around this world or universe, whatever you want to refer to it as, than any dark force, just by numbers. So the odds that you'd run into something that's the demonic end, I think, would be very slim, to be honest, if it even exists, which I have no proof of that at all, or anything that would make me think it does, to be honest.
Oh, interesting. I've met a few people, actually, not like a few as in 20, 30 people. I've met one or two other people who don't really believe in the existence of demons and demonology. So that's really interesting. I kind of have to ask, besides, you know, the lack of proof, but for anyone who's grown up in a religious household or whatever, of course, we've kind of been raised with the whole idea that, you know, Satan is kind of out to get us and demons are out there. But I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what has it been like going through the paranormal community with that I don't want to say mindset, because that sounds like it's in cement and set in stone. But how do you work through cases that come across as quote unquote darker, or they think that it's a demon?
Well, I know on private cases, we've never found anything even remotely that bad. I mean, when I say darker spirits, I mean things that have done stuff we were told, but they've never done it to us. Okay. So for me to look at it, if somebody's home is their home and they think it's a dark spirit, even if we can't prove it, if they want it blessed, I know groups that will come out and bless, they can have a priest bless it. It's not going to affect, you know, me none as an investigator if that's what they want. It's their property. You know, that's at the end of the day, it's what makes them comfortable. And if that helps them, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time that we've run into that, I do believe the blessings or the idea of it has helped them, because it's what they needed,
right,
to get through.
Yeah, it seems like it all comes back to will and intent and faith in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Cool. We had another question from our listener who wants to know who your influences are.
Wow, that's a tough question to answer, because like I said, I've just read so many things over the years. I'm not sure I've ever had one person I could latch onto that says, you know, I wanted to be like this person. I mean, growing up as a kid, I mean, I loved Ghostbusters, but I never wanted to really be, you know, especially when you get older, you didn't want a proton. Oh, actually, I shouldn't say that. I do want a proton pack, but you know,
I was about to say, come on now.
Yeah, as in the real paranormal investigators and people who have done the research, I don't know if there's one person I could actually single out at all. I mean, I think I've learned from almost everybody I've ever talked to or worked with, so I don't think there's one person I could even just say is above the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
Okay. Is there anyone whose methods or techniques that you see and you're like, wow, they're totally on the ball, I want to have them on my next program or in my next article or my next event?
Well, I know when I was looking through different, guidelines for investigation and whatnot, the first team I found that had a lot of really good ideas and thoroughness was Antietam Paranormal Society.
Mm-hmm.
They, a lot of our guidelines are the same, because I looked at what they did and I said, this is really in depth and really good. And it's all simple stuff, but you know, sometimes you don't think about that on the outside looking in about what people do on investigations. It's, you know, people assume it's just, you know, cut and dry, and there's a lot of little things that go into it. Most of them are just safety things. So.
Yeah, safety is always a good thing. Is there anything that you've seen amateur ghost hunters or beginners do out in the field that kind of make you scratch your head or make you want to shout, no, stop doing that?
I had a former member of my team that used to say everything was demonic, and I hated that, because that, especially on private cases, that's an easy way to stir up the client, and that's not good. You're supposed to be there to help them, not get them more agitated. And
right.
Again, going back to saying that there's no real proof that this, and I don't mean just literally, I don't mean like a demon has to be in front of you to say it's real, but I mean what we've collected does not tell me it's a demon. Like it's a data demon, I guess you'd call it. But it's just, there's certain words you just don't use when you don't need to. If there's an activity in the house and you just know it's activity, It may sound evil or demonic, but until you investigate it, you don't know. You can't jump to conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of stuff irks me to no end, because you have to, and I've done it too, where I've jumped to a little bit too far, but, you know, when you're training people, you just have, they have to realize too that, yeah, sometimes you got to pull back a little bit and just try to look outside in at what's going on.
Right. Now, what do you do if you run into a case where you think the client is mentally ill? How do you go forward?
Well, thankfully, we've never encountered that, but I have given that thought, because I've gotten calls from people that I think have some issues. A good example is someone called me up that had a substance abuse problem at one point, bad, and from my understanding of their substance issues, which by no means am I a doctor or anything, but I have a little bit of knowledge just from looking into things, it sounded like they were all symptoms of his problem that were never going to go away. I ended up talking to a psychologist on the side, basically saying, if somebody came up to you with this stuff, does that sound like something that would be, you know, like a brain tumor or this addiction, basically, even though he's clean, it's like the withdrawal stuff on it. And I got told, yes, that sounds like it would either be a tumor or some other medical issue or possibly this. And it matched up a lot of their checklist stuff that they did. And I know the guy was supposed to have some medical tests done anyway, because a lot of groups suggested this gentleman have basically tests on his you know, brain for a tumor or other something else. And I was waiting for a response back from that. So I have no idea what happened after that. But everything that, you know, he told me sounded a lot like sleep paralysis and, you know, withdrawal symptoms from these this substance. And it was just one of those things that I look at and go, well, there's not much we could really do to help you in that situation, you know. That's their own, well, lack of a better term, demon to deal with.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it seems that that's a big... that's a big thing now coming up, being discussed in this field, is mental illness. So,
yeah, basically I can shorten that all up by just saying that if you think somebody's got a mental problem, you just try to direct them towards, you know, getting checked and talk to a doctor about that. At that point, you've done everything you can do. I mean, unless they're a harm to themselves or something, you know, they just have to point them in the right direction and just hope that they go get the help they need or could need. But we have to be comfortable too. I mean, going out and be safe as well when we go to these places, because, you know, you never know. You just don't.
Yeah, totally agree with that. All right, so we got a few minutes left of our show, and I wanted to ask you one more paranormal-related question. What are your thoughts about shadow people?
Well, I saw them when I was younger, so I do believe they exist, but I don't know necessarily what that is. So, I mean, it could be a spirit. I mean, there's a lot of ideas and theories with that, but it's hard to say what anything that we investigate really is. So I believe they're out there. I just don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there's been some theories out there of aliens, parallel universes, ghosts, demons, all that fun stuff. So, and I know there's actually websites out there dedicated to shadow people sightings. So,
yeah.
Cool. All righty. So we're getting to the last few minutes of our show. So, John, where can people find you if they want to look into you and find out more about the events and magazine and whatnot?
Well, my paranormal group is midnightwatchman.com. Paranormal Dictionary is paranormaldictionary.com. Paranormal Enlightenment magazine is at paranormalenlightenment.com. And as we get the Paranormal Dictionary updated, all of the stuff is on there as well for links in the group to get you back to the websites. So there's a few different ways. And the expo is Paranormal Journeys at obviously, and that can be found off of the Midnight Watchman page at the front. So,
cool. Also, sounds like you got a lot of great stuff going there. And, yeah, seriously, thank you so much for, you know, taking time out of your busy schedule and spending some time with us on the air and answering some really random questions and telling us more about your projects.
No, no problem. Thank you for having me. I love random questions, to be honest. It's better than just the list that you know is coming.
Oh, gotta love the lists. They make things so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, John. Well, we'll definitely be keeping in touch. And everybody, you heard how you can find him. And if you guys missed any of the answers or stories that John talked about on the air, be sure to get in touch with us, and we'll get you connected with John. And make sure you guys check out the magazine, the dictionary, and the expo coming up, and it's going to be really good stuff. Cool. So, John, I'll go ahead and bid you adieu for the evening. And, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, that was John C. Fowler. And I have to say that was a really, really interesting interview. And it's really refreshing to meet somebody who's on the forefront of basically trying to change and affect the paranormal community in a very positive way. So make sure you guys check out Paranormal Enlightenment Magazine as well as Paranormal Dictionary and the Expo. There's lots of good stuff coming up there. And that is the show for this evening, everybody. So for the next 2 weeks, we will, of course, since we are a bi-weekly show, we will be back in 2 weeks. And we will have brand new guests, new topic, same time, same channel. And make sure you guys keep in touch with Live Paranormal, because there are quite a few interesting developments happening with Live Paranormal. Live Paranormal TV, there's going to be some classes coming up that may or may not be taught by yours truly. And you may or may not be hearing me again tomorrow evening to help introduce a brand new show on liveparanormal.com. So make sure you follow The Wicked Domain on Facebook, Twitter. Just type in The Wicked Domain on Live Paranormal and you will definitely find us. And yeah, we'll see you all in 2 weeks. And keep your minds open, everybody. Believe everything, question everything, and we will see you all in a few weeks. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.